Thank you all for coming. My name is Jay Nair. So we are actually going to start with a short meditation. The meditation is I'll be singing, and then you can focus your 100% attention on my voice. You can close your eyes or look 45 degree down. And before singing, I just want to run through you the lyrics of it. So this is the song I'm going to sing, Bhavani Dayani. It's a song on Mother Goddess. What it means is, O Mother Goddess Bhavani, all compassionate, essence of all teachings, worshipped by all angels, humans and sages, known by all Buddhas, creator of universe, provider of universe, killer of egos, with radiant face, ferociously angry on evil, giver of immortality. That's what I'm going to sing.
Did you translate?
I'm sorry?
Did you do the translating?
Yeah.
Nice.
Have anybody heard this song before? No.
Have you sung it for us before?
Not here, but I have sung in other places, yeah.
Bhavani Dayani Maha ಸುರವಾಣಿ ಸುರನರ ಮುನಿ ಜನಮಾನಿ ಸುರನರ ಮುನಿ ಜನಮಾನಿ ಸಕಲ ಬುಧ ಜ್ಞಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ದಯಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ಜಗತ ಜನನಿ ಜಗದಾನಿ ಜಗತ ಜನನಿ ಜಗಜಾನಿ ಜಗಜನನಿ ಜಗಜಾನಿ ಜಗತ ಜನನಿ ಜಗಜಾನಿ ಮಹಿಷಾಸುರಮರ್ದಿನಿ ಮಹಿಷಾಸುರಮರ್ದಿನಿ ಜ್ವಾಲಾಮುಖಿ ಚಂಡಿ ಜ್ವಾಲಾಮುಖಿ ಚಂಡಿ ಜ್ವಾಲಾಮುಖಿ ಚಂಡಿ ಜ್ವಾಲಾಮುಖಿ ಚಂಡಿ ಅಮರ ಪದ ದಾನಿ ದಯಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ಮಹಾವಾಕ್ಯ ವಾಣಿ ಮಹಾವಾಕ್ಯ ವಾಣಿ ಸುರನರ ಮುನಿ ಜನಮಾನಿ ಸುರನರ ಮುನಿ ಜನಮಾನಿ ಸಕಲ ಬುಧ ಜ್ಞಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ದಯಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ದಯಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ದಯಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ದಯಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ ಭವಾನಿ
We're going to meditate for 3 minutes. So I grew up in India, and I was very fortunate to be living with my grandmother and grandfather, because both of them were very much steeped in yoga tradition, and my mother also. So I have seen my mother and grandmother do all kinds of bhakti yoga practices in our house. And why I want to do this presentation as of about bhakti yoga, this will be a totally different kind of presentation than what you might have heard or seen about bhakti yoga. So the reason I want to share is the effect of the teachings of my parents and my grandparents on me. So I call bhakti yoga as the asana practice of heart. So in West, yoga is very synonymous to hatha yoga, that is body-based practice. And then there is meditation, which is like mind control, training the mind. And bhakti yoga is mainly presented in the West as a kirtan and chanting and joyful living or devotional practice. But it is much more deeper and subtle than that. And that's why I call it the asanas of heart. So Helen Keller said, "The best and most beautiful things in this world cannot be seen or even heard, but must be felt with the heart." It's one of my favorite quotes. And you know what she means by that when you look at her spending time with the dog. You don't need to be seen, or you don't need to say anything or hear anything to enjoy the presence of a dog. Or God, I said God. She said, "I can see that, and that is why I can be happy in what you call the dark, but which to me is golden. I can see a God-made world and not a man-made world." So I just want to start with this quote, because we are talking about asanas of heart. So the bhakti movement actually started in the 12th century. 12th to 8th century was the bhakti movement peaked in India. And this is the time when Indians have been the most poor and been exploited by the foreigners, and also persecuted and tortured. So all other yoga practices did not work, because people were suffering intensely, and the only thing they could do is bhakti practice, because it's very intense, and it can be done alone in your own heart. You don't need anything, you don't need any space. It is just an intimate relationship with you and God, or whatever you call that ultimate truth. So there are a lot of bhakti poets well known outside India, are Kabir, Mirabai, Tyagaraja. These are all bhakti poets from 12th to 18th century. So I'll be singing some of the poets, some of the poetry of these poets in this 2-week presentation. And I want to start with Bhakti Sutra. There is a sutra called Bhakti Sutra, which is a very small book. It is like 10 pages or something, 84 verses. And the first verse starts with this. The author is Narada. It's called Narada Bhakti Sutra. "Now I will explain what bhakti is." Now, if you know about Yoga Sutra of Patanjali, it starts with, "Now I will explain what yoga is." That's the first verse, right? That is the way that sutra period, every sutra starts with that. "Now I'm gonna say what." So he says, "Now I will explain what bhakti is. It is the highest ecstatic love for the unborn, undying nature of all beings. One who gets it reaches perfection, immortality, and always content. One who gets it desires not, worries not, hates not, indulges not, and agitates not. One who attains it becomes intoxicated and will be stunned and drunk in true self. So this is the first verse, so you know how the rest 83 verses are going to look like. I'm not going there. In my next week, I'm going to end with the 84th verse. So I think, in my opinion, only that first and the last one matters, because they are the condensed ones. So the text that I'm actually basing this presentation are four texts, which is Bhagavata Purana, Bhakti Sutra, Bhagavad Gita, and Yoga Sutra. How many of you have heard about Bhagavata Purana? Anybody? No. Bhagavata Purana is actually considered the. Let me talk about the Purana. Have anybody heard the name Purana? Purana is actually like Sutra is kind of a category of text, right? There is Yoga Sutra, Bhakti Sutra, there is Heart Sutra, all kinds. So there was a period of time in India where all texts were called Sutras. And then the story goes, all the sages, after finding out ultimate truth, they figured out everything, but they were still really unhappy. Unhappy not because of themselves, they were really unhappy that people were not actually getting it. They figured out the truth. But normal people, householders or even uneducated or all walks of life, people were not actually getting it the way they got it. So they were actually struggling with it. So then what happened is, the story goes, Sage Narada appeared before them and said, why don't you actually write all those findings in all the sutras and Upanishads in a story, as a story? You know? So then that started the age of Puranas. Purana means it's called history. History, fictional history. Yeah. So they started teaching everything in the form of stories. So there are 18 Puranas, major Puranas, and Bhagavata is considered the king of all Puranas. And it is actually considered so great that anybody who actually goes through that, it's a big book, unlike the Bhakti Sutra, which is a very small 10-page thing. Bhagavata is very big, and there are a lot of commentaries by different sages. And there is a tradition in India where people take retreats on this text, just like we take retreat on Lam Rim. You know, we take 21 days or something and then go through the Tibetan text of liberation in the palm of your hand, Lam Rim. Like that in India, it's very common even now. Every day there will be some retreat going on this text somewhere in India. 365 days a year there will be. And it is a 7-day retreat, and then that Bhagavata Purana every day it actually teaches, and then the expectation is by the 7th day you actually have reached enlightenment. Yeah. And that's why they call Bhakti Yoga the fastest way. And in 2000, my mom actually was diagnosed with colon cancer, and then we expected her to live about 6 months, but she ended up living about 18 months. And then I came here after she was diagnosed. She did chemo and surgery and chemo, and she actually was regained her health, and we thought she's gonna live for a little bit more longer. And so that's why I was taking care of her and I came here. But then 2 months after I came here, she became really bad. And then all my family asked her, what to do, do you want to do anything? So she said, I want to have a 7-day retreat of this Bhagavata Purana in my house. So everybody was happy, and then we actually invited, we have a big front yard and backyard, so we made big sheds and then invited the best teacher at that time, the best priest at that time, and we gave you know lunch and dinner for 100 people every day.
Wow.
and it was a huge deal. So after 7 days, when I talked to my mom, I was not talking to my mom. I was talking to somebody else. And she died in 1 month after that. So I actually felt like I was closer to my mom than my dad. So I know my mom really well. And when I talked, I was not talking to my mom. I knew I was not talking to her. Because she sounded, felt so different. She was at so peace with herself, and she was ready to go. And she left in a month. So this is very real to me, this tradition of 7-day retreat. And I have not studied it thoroughly, but I have an overview, more than overview I have, and I believe in that. And eventually I want to do that. That's one of my aspiration in the West. It has not come to the West. So eventually I want to do that seven-day thing. And it has stories and poetry and singing, all of that I like to do. So, so that is Bhagavata Purana. So I'll be telling some stories of that. And Bhakti Sutra and Bhagavad Gita and Yoga Sutra will touch on that next week. I just want to this is a verse from Bhagavad Gita, which says, Ishvara Sarva Bhudanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtadi, means Lord resides in the heart of all living beings, impelling them with his magical power as if they were figures mounted on a carousel. Just another verse that talks about asanas of heart. So you may be familiar, some of you may be familiar with this. There are the four major categories of yogas, right? So there's karma yoga, which is the art of using actions for reaching yoga. Action means body, mind, and speech. And the best example I can see is Mahatma Gandhi and Mother Teresa. And there are many in the West, or anywhere in the world, there are a lot of karma yogi. That is the most common form of yoga, using service to others to lose yourself. Then Raja Yoga is the art of using your energies in the body and breath for reaching yoga. That is, you know, in Hatha Yoga, Pranayama, the 8-limb Ashtanga Yoga, which is mainly dealing with manipulation or training the energies in your body and breath. And Jnana Yoga is the art of using your mind and intellect for reaching yoga, the contemplation, the analytical meditations, and all to reach and controlling the mind and intellect, a subtle intellect also to reach the yoga. And Bhakti Yoga is the art of using love and deep reverence for reaching yoga. So the devotion for your teacher, devotion for your brothers and sisters in the path, and devotion for the ultimate. Kabir said, I had a vision of ultimate truth for 15 minutes in my life, and the rest of my life was devoted to that 15 minutes. Yeah. So Bhakti Yoga is the use of our emotions, which is actually more stronger than, in my opinion, stronger than the energies, the breath. Emotions and love and reverence for reaching yogas. So anytime, if you have questions, feel free to ask. Yeah.
What do you mean by yoga? Like reaching yoga? What's
yoga? Yoga actually means union, the literal meaning. But reaching yoga, in the sense, the assumption behind that is most people are living in a dualistic world of me in competition with other. And that's actually not true. So when I live in that, I have to look after myself, and I have to always have, you know, like somebody and dislike something, and I have to have some gains and some losses. So like the 8 wins that we talk, gain and loss, what is that? Fame and disrepute, that 8 wins. So that is a dualistic way of living. So one, if I, that is a, that is the world we are born into. But since the sages know that that is not true, and they say that there is a way of getting rid of that ignorance, which is a cause of that, and then once you get rid of that, it becomes non-dualistic life, which is yoga itself. And that is not something that you actually union with something outside you. It is just ignorance or misunderstanding that you get rid of, and you will be the same as before, but you will be more deeper. You will be connected to the first one, the undying, unborn nature of your true self. That's what, I know this is a 2-minute definition of yoga, but.
That was good though.
Thank you. So bhakti, there are a lot of categories of bhakti. One category is sadhana bhakti and para bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means bhakti. Actually, in Sanskrit, there is a word called vibhakti. Vibhakti means, I don't know what is the name in English for that. Me, mine, myself, for me. Is there any category?
Narcissism.
No, in grammar.
In grammar.
Possessive.
Self-absorbed.
Something like
pronouns. Yeah, so
personal pronoun.
So vibhakti in Sanskrit is that personal pronoun, like me, myself, for me, by me, mine. So like that eight is there, and bhakti is the total opposite of that. So that is etymological meaning of bhakti. And sadhana bhakti is using bhakti as a practice. So I'm gonna talk about the 9 different practices of bhakti in the coming slide. So using that practices is called sadhana. Sadhana means practice. You may already know that word. Sadhana is a practice, Sanskrit word for practice. Para bhakti means the bhakti after enlightenment. Para means beyond. So if you know Heart Sutra, gate gate para gate means gone beyond. So once the one who has gone beyond the dualistic world, he also have a kind of bhakti, which is called para bhakti. That is one kind of classification. Another kind of classification is saguna bhakti and nirguna bhakti. Saguna bhakti is bhakti on form. So a bhakti yogi actually based on their temperament will be attracted to some deities. In India, actually, there are like 33 million deities. 33 million. Like 33 million is a big number even now, but think about 10,000 years back. There may be only 1 million people in India. More than people, there are deities, because that is actually their sages' secret way of teaching people that everything is God or everything is divine. So there are like 33 million deities, right? So saguna bhakti is if you look at some yoga practitioner, they are very much attracted to Hanuman. Some are very attracted to Durga and Kali and feminine, that goddess, that fierce goddess. Some are very much attracted to Ganpati, you know, Ganesha. So Ganesha. And some are very much attracted to Shiva.
Or Ganesha.
Yeah. So every yogi has a Ishta. Ishta means a favorite deity. So saguna bhakti is actually focusing totally on that deity, the qualities of that deity, the form of that deity, and then trying to be like that deity. And nirguna bhakti is formless. Kabir is an example. So formless means they don't have any human form or any name or any shape or anything like that. But they always call God or ultimate truth that. So that's why Kabir said, I experienced that for 15 minutes and the rest of my life was devoted to that. That only word that they use is that, because once they have known that, they come separate from that to exchange love with that. That is the concept. I don't know. I can't. A bhakti yogi, after attaining yoga, which is a unification with the ultimate truth or the deity or that, comes back from that unification and live in the duality so that they can exchange, send and receive love through that. Think about that.
Like a mirror.
Another form is, I don't know the Sanskrit word this, but it is baby kitten bhakti, baby monkey bhakti. Do you have any idea what that is? Kitten and a monkey have the relationship with their mother is totally different. A kitten actually just sits where their mother puts, sometimes in the attic, sometimes in the sun, sometimes in the bushes. Kitten has no preference, where it's total surrender to the mother. The mother decides and kitten is happy. They just say meow meow. And the mother will take, and you know, it doesn't matter where the mother puts them. But monkey is not like that. The mother doesn't care. Baby monkey's job to hold on to the mother. The mother will be fighting for the food. Mother will be jumping from one tree to another, doing all kind of things. Mother knows that the baby will not leave. So in the first one, the kitten is banking on mother's love to the kitten. And the second one, the mother is banking on baby's love to the mother. So these are the two kinds of love affair between a mother and baby. And there are two types of bhakti yogis like that. One is like total surrender to their deity. It doesn't matter what happened. There is a famous story said by Ramakrishna. Anybody heard about Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa? Yeah, Sri Ramakrishna is the 18th century sage who actually revived the bhakti. After the British rule of 200 years, the educated middle class of India wanted to change everything. They considered Hinduism and Sikhism and Jainism, Buddhism, everything as out of date, and they wanted to change everything. So there was a time when Dharma was not actually practiced in India in 18th century. So Ramakrishna is a illiterate Brahmin priest from East Bengal, West Bengal, who actually revived the bhakti practice. So he always teaches in stories. One of his stories is like, there was a bhakti yogi. Once he came to a village, and there was a robbery happening. The robbers robbed gold or whatever, and then they were chased by the king's people, and the robbers put the gold in front of the monk or the yogi, and then they left. So the police caught the monk, took him to the jail, took him to the court, and then later people caught the actual robbers, and then they were sentenced, and then the yogi was let go. So people asked, what happened to you? And he said, by Ram's will I sat there, by Ram's will the robbers robbed, by Ram's will the robbers put the gold in front of me, by Ram's will I was taken as a prisoner, by Ram's will I was sentenced, by Ram's will people caught the robbers, by Ram's will the robbers were presented to the court, by Ram's will they let me go. So the kitten bhakti yogi is like that. Everything, they're fine with everything.
Oh God.
I don't know if I'm making sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So that is one way of living bhakti yoga practice. Another one is, you know, it's based on my conviction. Whatever happens, I'm actually going to practice this. So those are the two different types of, there are many other classifications, but these are the three I wanted to present. this is another kind of classification, four types of bhakti, which is actually, this is a teaching from Sri Ramakrishna himself. He says there is a sadhana bhakti, which is actually the practice of the nine limb practice, which we'll go later. Bhava bhakti is that when that sadhana bhakti actually matures, it becomes an ecstatic mood, which doesn't leave the yogi. It becomes a mood of 24/7 mood. He lives in the world with that bhava. There is no English word for that bhava, but the closest I could come is an ecstatic mood. Whatever he does in his day-to-day life, 90% of his mind will be in that mood. So once the sadhana bhakti matures, it becomes a bhava bhakti, and then the bhava bhakti becomes mahabhava, and prema means love actually. And then it becomes, so he said there are like four stages of bhakti. So we are actually in this presentation, I'm only talking about first and two. This first one, there are like nine sadhanas in the nine limb practice. And then there are five bhavas that I'm going to cover, five ecstatic moods. The five bhavas, I'm going to go to the second one first. Just like we talked about the relationship between a baby and mother, there are five relationships which are considered divine in our life. The relationship between mother and kids, relationship between a guru and a disciple, that is very unique, a relationship between two best friends. You know, I have friends in India that we grew up with. We don't talk for years, but sometimes when I go back, it feels like we were talking yesterday, you know. So. And then there is a relationship of the last one, of a romantic partner, lovers. And then the fifth one is called the Shanta, which is the relationship of a Buddha or God or to the rest of the beings. So these are the five divine relationships or divine moods that we have, we experience in our life. So bhakti, in bhava bhakti, these relationships or these moods are actually cultivated to extend not only just to our mother, but consider everybody else as mother. Not only just to our, it is based on my temperament. If I'm if I experience more bliss or more depth in my relationship with my friends, that is my temperament. So my practice, I will try to extend that friendship, which is Sakya, the third one, to all beings. So it's a skillful means of. So bhava is an internal practice, an all-encompassing love, universal love that makes everything joyous and beyond pain and pleasure. And suffering is also joy in path of bhakti. So the first one is Shanta. Shanta means placid, peaceful love. It can be for God or Guru or nature or universe. Most of the monks or renunciants use that style of bhakti, bhava bhakti. The next four are mostly for householders. The second one is called Dasya Bhakti. Dasya Bhakti is the relationship between a master and servant, or a guru and a disciple. A disciple, when they actually have this heart connection with the gurus, they're called heart guru, they will do anything. They don't even care about their own enlightenment or anything. All they want is there is a precious thing there, and we want to take care of some, you know. So Hanuman's relationship with Ram was Dasya Bhakti. So you know a lot of people like Krishna Das, Ram Das, Govinda Das. So they, by taking that Das name, they are actually reminding themselves and others that is their mode of bhakti. They are actually servants. Servants of the servants of God. That's what they mean. So these names are actually taken by themselves or mostly given to themselves by teachers. By looking at them, they know their temperament and give to them. And it is not prepared. Once a yogi, except somebody has a teacher, they give a name based on, they look at them and know these five which suits them and give the name. So that's what it means, like Krishna Das. Many of the Kirtan practitioners are Dasya Bhakti. And The second one, Sakya, let me go to the fourth one. Vatsalya is called the attitude of mother towards her child. So we already talked about that. So these three ones, the peaceful ones, the Dasya servant, and Vatsalya, which is the attitude of mother and child, these are actually practices, but the next two are not only practices but also results. So it is actually faking till you make it, fake till you make it kind of a thing. Like Sakya means friendship, that is treating the God or ultimate truth or whatever name you call as your friend, as equal. You're not below or above. So it is a very tricky thing to do, because your ego can be, if you're not genuine, or if it hasn't come to you, and if you're trying to make it, your ego can, it can be counterproductive. And Madhura Bhakti is attitude of a lover towards God, and seeing everybody as lovers, which is also very tricky.
Dangerous.
Yeah, and dangerous. So these two are actually acquired also. Like you, there will be a time when you can actually see everybody as equal, but those two are actually very dangerous too if it is not given to you by nature or a guru. So these are the five bhava bhaktis that is ecstatic moods that you live with the rest of your life once you go through the store. There is a story about Navayogis. Nava means nine. There is a story about nine yogis walking into the palace of a king. And the king asked these nine yogis, they were brothers, and they asked this question. The first question to first yogi, the second question to second yogi. So what is bhakti? Who is a bhakta? Who is a devotee? And the third, those are the two questions that are actually relevant for this, for today. So when I was looking for nine yogis, these are actually living, these are Thailand monks. There is actually nine monks in a monastery like this. So I just thought of putting that.
that's Ajahn Mun in front.
Oh, really?
Yeah, second from the left.
They are called nine monks of a monastery. I took it from a website. So these nine monks are the main monks of that monastery. So he's the main teacher. And that center, Ajahn,
what is it? Center? I'm not familiar with him. The one that I'm talking about is to the left of the one in the center.
Oh,
second from the left on the bottom.
Oh, okay.
Acharya Mun.
Okay. So the first one, first yogi's name is Kavi, and he was replying to the king. And the king asked, what is bhakti? Kavi said, Kavi is the eldest of the nine brothers. The root of all sorrow in the is the identification of body and mind. He who attains the feet of God is freed from this error, and so is freed from all fear. Dedicate every action done by mind, word, and deed to God. Thus come to him and be free from fear. Kavi continued, hearing the elevating stories of Lord, singing them loud, boldly, unashamed. Your love for God waxes and melts the mind. You laugh aloud, sometimes you cry, sometimes you dance as if possessed. You see the wind, the sky, the seas, the stars, and the creatures all as the Lord's own body, and prostrate before all of them. Then you get devotion, then you get bhakti, oneness and dispassion. Even as food gives fullness, growth and strength. Oh Raj, Raja means king, the devotees get all these at once. So this is the answer of the first yogi to the king for the question, what is bhakti? And the second question to the second yogi is, what is the qualities of a devotee? A devotee, in the Sanskrit term for devotee, is bhakta. Bhakti is love, and bhakta is the one who practices that. Or bhakti yogi is a bhakta. She says there are three types of devotees. The first one, the perfect one, middle one, which is Madhyama, and Prakritam, which is a bigger one. Hari is the name of the second yogi. He says, he who sees the Lord in all creatures, irrespective of who they are, he is indeed the greatest among devotees. So he has no difference. He sees his Ishta, his deity everywhere. That's a perfect yogi, bhakti yogi. Second one, who is just friendly to all beings is a devotee of second order. So the second one is Maitri, the metta. Maitri means friendship. And who sees the Lord only in idols but not in others is a devotee of third order. A true devotee has no desires for sensuous things. He is not caste conscious or any class conscious or any kind of social category. He never says this is mine or this is his. He is serene, peaceful and considers all as equals. Even the wealth of the three worlds cannot make him stray an inch. The sense passions cannot lure him whose heart is kept cool by the Lord's grace. Even past karmas and sins vanish like the dew when the sun of devotion rises in his heart. So this story is actually, it goes very deep after that. You know, the third, what is Maya? How to cross over Maya? Maya is illusion or ignorance. Who is Narayana? So I'm not going there. It takes a whole day for that. I was looking at nine yogis, and there is a nine yogi thing, nine yogi tradition in Christianity also. Nine saints of Ethiopian church or something like that. So I just thought of, have anybody heard about that? Okay, this is the nine saints that walked from Rome to Ethiopia or something like that.
It's a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So, what is that?
I said definitely the same guys.
So we'll take a break in like 10 minutes. So before that, I'll give you an overview of the nine limb practice. The nine limb bhakti yoga practice is the first thing, the sadhana bhakti. The first one is called Shravan. The literal meaning is listening. Shravan. There's a category of monks in India called Shravakas. They just listen to teachings. Listening is their main practice. And listening directly from the teacher, you know. So our ears is the most subtle and most powerful sense that we have. You know, we can close our eyes, we can prefer not to eat and drink, but it's very difficult not to hear, and it is very difficult to get rid of what we hear. We can forget what we see. We can forget all our experiences, but what we hear, if it goes inside, it's very difficult to get rid of that. So what that means is the listening can be a source or a path to misery or also a path to truth. That's why the oral tradition is so important. That is the first stage. So what it actually means is listening to texts, stories, and songs, and what it means is studying by listening. The second one is kirtan. Kirtan actually means praising, or that's the literal meaning of this, praising. Praying, singing, telling that, what you heard, telling that with joy to others is the second one. And then the third one is smaran. Smaran means remembering. So what you heard, you actually tell. That's what I'm doing now. While I'm talking to you, I'm actually doing kirtan practice, because I'm talking about bhakti. Anything that anybody talks about bhakti is kirtan. It's not music. So, and then once I listen from my teacher, and once I tell to my friends, then what do I do after that? I think about that. Yeah, how good I felt. How, you know, rejoicing in that. So that is the smaran, remembering and contemplating on truth or gurus or devas or whatever way it works for you. One then is prostration. So first three is very simple. The next three, next four are actually deeper practices. It takes it to a next level of deeper veneration, deeper gratitude. Vandan means prostration, surrendering, total dedication of actions to the things we listen, talk, and think about. Take refuge. That is kind of a refuge. So we have come to the refuge section, which is 4 to 7. Prostrations with deep reverence and gratitude. The fifth is called Pada Sevan. Pada Sevan means, Pada means leg. And Seva, you know already, might have heard that name. Seva means service. So Pada Sevan means service to the feet of God. So all sentient beings, like according to a bhakti yogi, is the feet of God. So Seva at the feet. So it is not like I'm helping you, I'm at your feet. You know, so it's a different intensity there. Pada Sevan, it's not just, that's why it's called Pada Sevan, not Seva. You are actually not serving a person, you're serving his feet. You know? So there is more depth to that. Service to all sentient beings as limbs of God. And the sixth one is Dasya. Dasya is actually being a slave, like total servitude. So the Pada Sevan and Dasya is actually 10 times the Seva. So as I said, the Krishna Das means I'm the servant of servant of servant of my of Ram, kind of thing. So I'm the least, I'm the lowest of all kind of attitude. You know, in Tibetan Buddhism, there is this teaching of Lojong, where one of the first one is like, I consider all beings as precious and I'll be the last, or I'll be the lowest of all. So that is the attitude of a Dasya. A Ram Das or Krishna Das or Govind Das or Vishnu Das will be that who like to be at the feet. Puja is offering. You might have heard that name. Offerings and a lot of practices. And in Bhagavata Purana, it talks about 8 types of pujas. So when we say puja, it's actually offering water or flower. But in Bhagavata, it says Krishna likes 8 flowers. And the flowers, the first flower is ahimsa. So let me read this Sanskrit. Ahimsa pradhamam pushpam, pushpam indriya nigraham. Sarva bhudadaya pushpam, shama pushpam visheshtada. Jnanam pushpam, tapam pushpam, dhyanam pushpam, tattvacha. Satyam ashtavidam pushpam, Vishnu pridigaram bhave. Ahimsa, non-violence, is the first flower that we can offer Krishna. Indriya nigraha means control of senses. There is a limb of Ashtanga Yoga, which is pratyahara. That is indriya nigraha, control of senses. Sarva Buddha Daya. Daya means compassion to all living beings. That is the third flower. So this is how the Puranas actually teach. You know, they actually create this big beautiful deity, and then tell you to give offerings, and this is the offerings that you have to give. It's not just
it's a lot easier to give a flower.
So, and shama is patience, jnanam knowledge, tapas is austerity, dhyanam contemplative meditation is the 7th pushpam. Pushpam means flower in Sanskrit. Satyam, so 8th one is truth. So it's actually this offering is actually, this takes the practice of offering at a much deeper thing. Like I can be telling something to you and actually thinking that I'm doing a puja, and I can be talking to one of my coworker and showing compassion and think that actually I'm actually doing puja to my deity. So it's not like Jay as an ego is doing a thing for, I'm actually serving my guru or my deity by talking to my friend who is having a bad time. So these 8 limbs I actually think about like this. The roots of that is Shravan, Kirtan and Smaran, which is like the listening practice, the talking and singing practice, and the remembering, rejoicing practice as the root and trunk. And the next four is the prostrations, Pada Sevan, Dasyam, the servitude, and the offering as the trunk and the branches. And the last two, which is the 8th and 9th, which is called Sakya, which is friendship, as equal to God or equal to Guru or equal to truth, that I have attained, I know for sure that I have experienced the truth, that confident, that equalness. I know that I have become the diamond, kind of. That confidence is the Sakya level, and total self-surrender. These are actually the fruits, flower and fruits. This is how I actually look at this 9-limb Bhakti Sutra practice. So I'm gonna sing a song after our 5-minute break. It's 7:30 now, so have tea and snacks. And we also have somebody's birthday today. Do you have?
I do. Not ready?
Okay. Okay, so let's take a 5-minute break and celebrate somebody's birthday.
Wow. This is really informative. It's not at all what I expected.
Oh, really?
I expected to come here and just hear instruments.